Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on
a big step!
Oh,
brother!
Lead Toledo, Ernest. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast at HardwickProfessionalism.com. I am Jason Mann. With me, as usual, is Rich Craich. Hello, Rich.
Hi. Did anything happen? I was gone last week. I was moving, so I don't know if anything happened in basketball, but I feel you can clue me in, so okay. I'm waiting. I saw Chandler Parsons signed a deal with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah,
that's, wow.
That's pretty big news.
How significant.
Yeah, I feel like we should talk a lot about that.
Timothy Mozgov. I'm looking at the Newswire right now. Yeah, Timothy Mozgov to the Lakers. Wow, a lot of really important moves going on. Movers and shakers of the world.
Keep looking, you know. See,
okay, I'll keep.
There might be some bigger news there.
Let's see here. Zaza Pachulia, Warrior. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. He's
that team's really, really upgraded from last year.
That's true. So, of course, we are the big news.
Yes.
Kevin Durant joining the Golden State Warriors, leaving the team that he had played for his entire career, leaving the team for the team that beat his team, overcoming a 3-1 series lead before they, in fact, lost a 3-1 series lead in the finals. The Golden State Warriors, the team of the moment, the team of the last couple of years in terms of dominating the story of the league, even though they lost in the finals, but they, of course, 173 wins during the season, one of the greatest teams of all time, even without the championship. I still put them in that category. So there's obviously been a lot of discussion in the past few days about Durant, how people talk about Durant, how people feel about it. Seen a lot of conversations. Some of it, most of it, I think, is is trying to be fair to him, but is not, there's different sides of this. There is the, is this how a superstar behaves? Is this, is he being disloyal? Does it just sort of suck from a competitive perspective? So we wanted to kind of unpack the things that we had seen discussed, sort of see where they come from, weigh in on a little bit, but just sort of, I think it's more about, it's less about debating it and more about talking about the conversation itself. And also we have a lot of things that, even though, there's never been a player as great at Durant at this point in his career, him being only 27 or 28, to join a team as great as the Warriors, because that combination of things has never happened before. With the salary cap rise, a team like the Warriors has never had an opportunity like this. Durant's, a player in Durant's stature has never really had an opportunity like this to join a team this stacked already, even though they had to make some cuts to get Durant going. So, obviously there's a lot to unpack here. Anything you want to throw in there before we kind of get started?
No, not really. I mean, we'll get into a little bit of the historical context as well of other guys. Like you said, it's kind of hard because there isn't like this comp of the Warriors are such a special thing of what they were able to do and how were they able to do it. And like the cap has to expand, Kevin Durant has to be this player that comes in at a certain age and signs, X amount of deals, so he's available at this time. And the big thing too, that people are kind of forgetting as well, is that a lot of it is that Steph Curry had to sign what people are sort of in retrospect going, oh, it's such a team friendly contract. Well, at the time he was, an off injured, leaky ankled like guard that nobody was really sure what he was going to do, if he was going to be healthy. And it just so happened that, they signed into this deal. And, in the Warriors, they probably took a little bit of a risk because he could have just had a horrible ankle injury and said, hey, I'm never going to be that good. My ankles won't hold up or whatever. But instead, he turned into, one of the greatest shooters of all time. And then they got, into decent drafts with guys like a Draymond Green and a Klay Thompson. They were able to draft those three guys, the Klay, the Steph, Draymond, sign Steph to a team-friendly deal. You know, be able to get those guys to all buy in to, you know, a Steve Kerr bringing a new coach, and that coach just instantly clicks with them. And then Durant just so happens to be available when the salary cap. Like, there's so many things that have to happen to make this scenario play out so that there isn't really a comp. So people looking for, you know, direct historical comps, you're never going to find that. But we found a few that are relatively similar, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. One thing before we can do it, that's going to lead into a decent conversation there. I think the one, because you can kind of see how the Warriors were built and the Thunder were built, and both are built through having really great success in the draft, of having, you know, 3 or 4 years of just incredible drafts in a row. The Thunder getting Durant, of course, at first, then Westbrook and Harden and other players as well. Serge Ibaka, that's who I was thinking of, who's, of course, was traded. The Warriors, of course, getting Steph and then Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, all those guys, you know, those were lottery guys, not Draymond, but Thompson and Curry were, you know, they were lottery guys, but they were, you know, not like top five picks. Like, they were, you know, eighth and ninth around that spot. So they were, you know, benefited from some luck in, you know, both teams did. But what the Warriors did that the Thunder never really were able to do is the Warriors put in players who were kind of, you know, complete veterans with a lot of like multidimensional skills, who were sort of like established players, putting in Iguodala, putting in Bogut, putting in Livingston, guys like that who were perfect complements for their stars. And the Thunder were never quite able to
Kendrick Perkins
accomplish it. Yeah. I mean, they had, you know, they had veterans too. I mean, you know, they had Nick Collison, who's, you know, good role players. Not like they didn't have talent around them, but it was just, you know, the chances that the Warriors took on that talent, on that established talent, even though the, you know, Curry and Draymond, all those guys are, you know, were started off very young and, you know, kind of became superstars in their mid 20s or so. The Thunder's timeline was a little bit earlier, but the Thunder kind of stayed ahead of their timeline a little bit and tried to get, you know, guys kind of with upside and kind of guys with potential, but didn't necessarily have the same complete players to complement those guys. And, you know, whether how much that had to do with it is up in the air. We're not going to litigate everything that's happened, but I you know, we're gonna have a little more discussion about, you know, kind of how the Thunder built the team and, you know, and things like that, and kind of where they go, where they fit among the, you know, what if possible dynasties of all time. And I think, you know, that should be thought about when we have that conversation.
Sure.
So, you know, I guess the first thing is the opinion is, you know, Kevin Durant taking the easy way out. Like, you know, on one hand, like, yes, I think it's going to be easier for him to win multiple championships with the Warriors, with the Thunder. Like, he has a chance with the Warriors to really to be a dynasty. I mean, the template is there. You never know if it's going to work. Obviously, they lost to Cleveland this year, which no very few people saw coming. So it's far from guaranteed, but they certainly, you know, they have four players who are in their late 20s who seem to complement each other perfectly, who have, you know, unbelievable shooting and playmaking and passing. So is this taking the easy way out? Is this how a superstar behaves? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, for me, it's not necessarily the easy way. And by the way, for the record, I don't, you know, to me, I'm not, I don't care that he did this. It's fine. You know, I actually enjoy the Warriors. I'm going to enjoy watching this team, you know, next year, and I'm going to enjoy people. I like the idea of a super team and people trying to fight the super team. Like, when the Heat thing happened, initially, you know, I was kind of like, oh, man, LeBron. Like, I like it better when he was in Cleveland. I like that idea. I like the, you know, maybe the Dirk model of just keep fighting, and eventually you'll get there. You know, eventually maybe you'll win a title, and that's so sweet. That's cool, but it's really cool too to see a super team as well. And then if it becomes a thing where people are going after that team of every game now against the Warriors are going to be appointment television. That with the big three of the Heat, that's how it was. You could not skip one of their games because you knew whatever team they were facing, be it a Utah, be it Memphis, it didn't matter who it was, they were going to bring their best because they wanted to beat the super team or whatever. Like that, that's really fun. That's kind of cool. At the same time, maybe it's a boring pick from Durant because I almost kind of like this idea of Oklahoma City and the Warriors being that sort of 1-2 punch in the West for a while. I mean, that's sort of a maybe sort of fantasy world that I had, that Westbrook and Durant would go, hey, man, you know, we got this close this year. Hey, we were one game away from toppling these guys and going to the finals and do whatever. You know, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's add this. Let's maybe I like that idea, too. I always like, you know, we on this podcast, we talk a bunch about, you know, Celtics Lakers of the 80s and of other eras, of how cool that was. You know, the Pistons Bulls of the late 80s, early 90s, of that sort of embedded rivalries of those two teams that just battle each other time and time and time again. And then, you know, maybe this side gets a little advantage, and then this side does, and this side, that's cool. You kind of lose that now with this Durant thing, and that's why I would almost call it, in a sense, maybe boring or disappointing, but I don't care that Durant went there. I don't care that, a superstar can do this. It's fine. It's whatever. You know what I mean? Like the idea that there's a template for how superstars behave and how they're supposed to act and how they're supposed to approach their careers and what they do is just silly. And we're going to talk about examples in history where the superstars have done this. Like guys that are all-time great players, top 10 all-time players, have done this exact same thing, you know, not to the same level maybe as Durant, but they've done this. And it's not like a crazy thing. Like the idea that there's a template that this guy just sticks with the team that drafted with him and does whatever he can to win with that team is just, it's weird. And it's just not true. It's just, guys don't do that. It just doesn't happen.
I mean, guys have obviously done that. I mean, a lot of players, special players have stayed with their team. And there is something special about a Tim Duncan career, or, you know, guys who are able to, or Kobe, you know, guys who are able to have a lot of success for one franchise. There is something special and interesting about that, but I don't think there's any moral virtue in it.
Right. Especially when Kobe won, Kobe's first three titles were as a result of a superstar coming to his team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's examples of countless ones. Yes. Everybody, the problem is, and we come into this with almost any NBA discussion that we seem to have these days with the masses, is that, like, yes, Michael Jordan won a bunch of titles with the Bulls. He stayed there. He was the leader. He was the, and people kind of assume that everybody now has to follow this sort of template of, oh, well, Jordan did this, and Jordan, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's such a strong cloud over how anybody thinks of modern superstars. Like, we know that LeBron follows that cloud all the time of the Michael Jordan thing. It's just always, you know, always not following the Michael Jordan template. So it's a very strange behavior that people have with it.
Yeah, and I do think there is something that's going to be missed in the fact that the Thunder – It did seem like a really interesting, exciting, budding rivalry between the Thunder and the Warriors, and we're not going to get that. And that is a bummer. But this does open up a couple of things. One, like, I don't think that the idea that he doesn't want to be the star or doesn't want the pressure holds much water to me, because he's gonna get the pressure. I mean, they're going to have such pressure on them.
Because LeBron definitely skirted any and all pressure once he went to the Miami. Like, nobody cared a thing about LeBron. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to get,
there's going to be so much scrutiny for this. There's going to be so much focus on this. And, you know, if there's any sign of trouble, it's going to be, it's going to be an issue for him. And, from some of the reporting, like Royce Young's, reporting, like, Durant is definitely a guy who hears the criticism and listens to it and, is it's occasionally angered by it and affected by it. And that's fine. That's human. We all have things that, we all have, personality issues or flaws or whatever, if you want to call it a flaw. But So I think the idea that they're, he is taking the easy way out in that sense. He is joining better players. Obviously, he is joining Steph Curry, and it's going to be really interesting to see. Because there was definitely the perception that when LeBron left, that he was joining Wade's team, and I don't think anybody thought of it as Wade's team by after the second season or so. And part of that was because Wade, he dealt with injuries and wasn't playing the whole time. And, he clearly stepped aside for Durant. I wonder if there's going to be anything, if we see that from Steph at all, of him taking a step back, or, whether these injuries they dealt with in the finals, or, if any of that's going to, linger on and limit him, or, if he just isn't going to quite get there athletically again. I mean, it's obviously hard to say, but I do think, Durant is third all time in points per game. I mean, I think that's easy to forget that he has been a tremendous superstar on the court. And, maybe part of the reason why he has, there's a thought that maybe he'll blend in and won't stand out, is because he's definitely a superstar on the court, but I don't know if he's a superstar in terms of fame and in terms of reputation on certain levels. I don't feel like he's been a guy who, I think the free agency, I think this move has been like by far the most that he's, you know, been discussed. I mean, and it's a big event, obviously, but I do feel like there is like a there is sort of a gap between the ability of a player that Durant is and his level of fame and his level of buzz. And I'm not really sure why that is. I find that interesting, though.
Yeah, no, I have noticed that as well. And I was in driving home today, I was listening to a few different podcasts and people were kind of equating that a little bit of like that. He seems like a guy that when you look at his numbers and you look at how good he is, that he should be like considered like the, you know, one of the, but you know, the top NBA stars, the most one of the more marketable guy. And he's just kind of not. And I don't know exactly if that's, you know, by choice of him or by choice of advertisers or it what's really done it, or maybe, you know, it is the market size, yeah. But we see that, you know, people bring that up all the time, but there, you know, there's a lot, plenty of markets that guys aren't. I just think he's kind of he's the guy that I remember when he first came into the league, he was getting a bunch of stuff. And then slowly but surely he kind of didn't, you know, he just started playing basketball. He was a basketball player. And that's why, you know, it's a little bit interesting that people ascribe him to being, you know, or like you said, the behavior of a superstar, of how is it? He's just a guy. I've always had this feeling of Kevin Durant that he's a guy that just like kind of likes playing basketball, and that's kind of it. You know what I mean? Like he has other interests outside of basketball and stuff here and there, but he's just a guy that I don't know that he wants, you know, this fame of, okay, now I can get in the movies and I can do this, except for Thunderstruck, which is one of the greatest movies of sure, any era. Sure. But I never saw it. I don't know.
We're gonna care to see it either. Right.
But I'm sure it's not very good, but yeah. I don't know. But you know, he just seems like a guy who just likes playing basketball. And it's like, hey, you know, whatever. Like, he wants to play basketball with some other guys and be on a cool team that has some, you know, this is going to be a fun team. I think that's the thing that's most interesting, is it's not just, oh my, you know, with a lot of these superstar teams, we saw that with the first year of the Big Three Miami Heat, it was like, oh no, who's going to get the ball, or how are they going to get the ball, or what's the offense going to look like? And we saw with that first year Miami, nobody, like, Wade kind of dribbled a lot, and then you'd pass to LeBron, and LeBron would dribble a lot, and like, I don't think that's going to be a problem with Golden State. So I can see the appeal from Durant's side as like, hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. Like, I'm going to have a lot of fun playing basketball, which I haven't really done in a few years, where it's been a lot of the load has been on me. And a lot of the it just hasn't been a fun offense either in Oklahoma City. It hasn't been a very fun team. It's been a very kind of serious thing. And then now in Golden State, it's going to be, hey, we just kind of pass and shoot, and it's going to be, you know, in that way, it's going to be a little fun. So I get it from that standpoint. He's just a guy that likes playing basketball, and it's just, it's interesting that every superstar in our mind, or in the media's mind or narrative mind, has to be this just undying killer that wants, you know, nothing more than to win a championship. And that is true. It's a little bit of what Durant's doing, but in a sense, he's also trying to do it while having fun, which isn't that kind of like, it's kind of admirable in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know, I think the 2015 season, and he was hurt, so this definitely part of the way to do with it, although he was healthy at the time at the All-Star game, but he had fewer All-Star game votes than Marcin Gortat that year, which I mean, he's had other years where he's been higher up, so that's not like the only time that ever happened, but it was like sort of stunning of like how
it's not that NBA All-Star game voters are always like, well, no, he's injured, he's not that, like, I'm not gonna vote for him. They're not like the most astute populace in the world.
I guess the point is, once he was out of sight, he was definitely out of mind for people, and that wouldn't happen with a Kobe or with, you know, the super duper stars, and you know, maybe going to Golden State will, you know,
or Jeremy Lin,
increase that, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, some of that, I think, personality-wise, some of it, I think, is, you know, being in Oklahoma City, being in a smaller market. Some of it is just, like, the guy who's sort of the cult hero on that team is Russell Westbrook, just, you know, with the reckless abandon style. And I think for Durant, it's sort of like, maybe it, like, seems a little bit too easy the way that he plays. I mean, we know better than that, but it is just sort of like, he's just this smooth score. He's like George Gervin, but like incredible at everything. But it looks a little bit too easy, you know, even though he's making difficult jump shots like Steph Curry, but you know, not quite as spectacular. But I guess if you're a 6'10 guy doing that, it doesn't inspire the same awe necessarily. So we, looking at sort of historically how we've looked at player movement, and you know, I think we all understand why Bird, Magic, and Jordan didn't switch teams, you know, because free agency wasn't really an option until the late 80s, unrestricted free agency anyway. There was limited free agency from the late 70s, you know, for a decade or so, but it was all restricted free agency. And also, you know, Bird and Magic, they went into winning situations and won basically for the entire decade. There was no reason for them to leave. Jordan
and historically great franchises.
Exactly.
You know, with great backbones of, you know, hey, look at all these rings and look at, you know, the great leadership we've had for you know, decades now. And that's, yeah, that's important.
Yeah. And Jordan, you know, the Bulls struggled for a few seasons it took a while to build a good team around him. But, you know, he didn't have the length of time to, you know, although he definitely dealt with, like, why hasn't Jordan won a title yet? It's been, you know, 7-8 years. But you know, I don't know if there was ever any serious, you know, thoughts that he might, you know, move on at some point. I mean, there was sort of the gradual building to more success, and they, you know, once they started to rise, they never really took a step back. They just kind of kept going and going, you know, climbing up the ladder. So there wasn't that level of disappointment. Whereas with the Thunder, you know, they got there in 2012 when Durant was really young and you know, the other guys were really young. And then, you know, once it's kind of stalled out, there was that feeling of disappointment and that feeling of, oh, you know, we haven't gotten there.
That's certainly, I think that finals run maybe did more, I don't want to say damage because damage isn't the right word, but just changed the perception to a lot of people because it was like, oh, cool, this is the team that can make the, you know, this is a perennial finals contender or whatever. And then, of course, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, there were some, you know, issues in terms of the NBA and the CBA and things like that sort of, you know, they weren't able to kind of keep the same team together. They had to mix a little bit of more movement than, you know, they probably would have liked and whatnot. So it kind of caused a little bit of an issue because, you know, of course, the Harden trade is one that people will always look at as, okay, you know, they made the finals, then they trade Harden, and then they don't get back there, and then now it's all blown up and it's all gone or whatever. Well, yeah, that is something, but there's also a bunch of different issues too. You know, injuries were a huge part too. You know, multiple years where, you know, you lose Westbrook 1 year, you lose Ibaka 1 year, and then you lose Durant. You know, in three consecutive years, they essentially lost one of their big three players, and you always wonder what would have happened if those three guys would have been there. You know, would they have at least made another finals run? But I always look at that 2012 year as like, it not damage, but it just kind of changed a lot of perceptions. Like, okay, they've arrived now. Let's go. We're ready to go. And it's like, maybe they weren't ready to be there at that point yet. Maybe it was a few more years until they had to kind of coalesce and get together. But there was always that pressure then because they made it that one time.
Yeah.
So
to what seemed like their credit at the time, the Thunder didn't necessarily overreact and you know, try to rush it with them. I mean, they kind of kept, you know, guys with upside. They didn't necessarily, you know, they didn't make short-term decisions that would have led to bad long-term consequences. I guess the problem with that is once they were ready to get to the point where, okay, it's time for us to start winning and start, you know, building this team around Durant and Westbrook, they had the problems that we've kind of gotten into a little bit, and they're going to discuss further. But you know, I know Matt Moore was talking, and others were talking about this today, the rings culture, the idea of, like, if you aren't a championship winner, you are nothing and you are terrible. Is that to blame for this? Does that put, like, so much pressure on these guys that they feel like they have to, you know, go to a situation, even if you're, you know, obviously upsetting a, you know, because, you know, we don't know Durant personally, but from a basketball perspective, Oklahoma City was a pretty good to very good situation for him. Like, you know, if the Warriors weren't there, they're absolutely a team that has a good chance to win a championship. And, you know, even still the dynasty potential is there, but is it just, you know, is it that? And do you think that's a new thing, or do you think that's kind of always been part of the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, the rings culture thing, I don't like it. I hate it. And you know, anybody that listens to this podcast knows that we try to look beyond just that and beyond just, I mean, look at the top 50 argument that we did last year. You know, top 50, there was a lot of people, we did our second best team of the 90s, and everybody said, oh, well, it has to be, you know, Houston because they won the other titles. And we're like, no, you know, these teams were very good in the 90s too, even though they didn't win titles. We've always been that. And I think that's something I've always enjoyed about this podcast, is we've tried to look beyond just, you know, championships and rings and try to look at more of the nuance or whatever. But it's just it maybe in a way it's to blame. I'm not in his head, like you said. I don't know for a fact, but I'm sure that plays a part in it. I'm sure, like you said, if Durant is a guy that hears this criticism, that hears this stuff, we know LeBron is a guy that takes, you know, a lot of criticism to heart or whatever, that Yeah, I'm sure they hear that stuff all the time. It's a part of the way we consume sports, and it's not just a basketball thing. It happens to be very big in basketball, but in the NFL, it's a huge thing with quarterbacks. Oh, you haven't won a Super Bowl. Well, you're not an elite quarterback yet, but then you win a Super Bowl. Okay, now you're an elite quarterback. Like, instantly, just like that, you know, you win three or four games, and now you're elite. You're great. You're the best, you know, going on right now. And, you know, baseball, less so you see it, but it's in a lot of ways, it's so embedded in our culture. And that's what I replied to Matt a little bit earlier on Twitter when I talked about it, is that I don't know if it's really going to go away. And it's not a new thing at all. It's something that's been around for a while, but seems to be especially big in today's sports culture and sport, because it's just a very easy way to talk and consume sports. Like, I think, again, like I mentioned, we do, I think, a very good job of looking at the nuance, and many writers do a great job of it. You know, there's tons of basketball bloggers right now that are just doing an incredible job of looking beyond that. But for the masses, it's a very easy way to discuss sports. It's very easy to get on a sports talk show and say, well, this guy's a failure because he hasn't won the big one, or how do you win a championship, or give, you know, it's a very easy way. It's success, fail, it's win, loss. It's very, like, it's very black and white. There's not nuance to it. It's so simple to just say that. So I think it's so embedded in our culture that I don't know if it's going anywhere. And I think it probably is partially to blame, but I think there's also other factors that you have to look into a little bit as well. But as far as the new thing, I think we can go back, and we've in this podcast looked in the past, that it's not necessarily a brand new thing that all of a sudden in the last 10 years you have to win a title or you're nothing, because there's many examples of it, you know, decades ago of there being questions about certain players because they hadn't won a championship, or, you know, a Bill Russell reaching the, you know, the apex of the NBA because he won the titles, and Wilt Chamberlain not because he hadn't won the title. So it's not necessarily a new thing, but I think there's a lot of hyper focus on it these days, more than maybe ever.
Yeah, and we're obviously aware of it because social media too. I mean, that changes how, you know, we kind of, the lens through which we view everything. If we're obsessed with social media, which many of us, you know, the obsessive basketball fan and the obsessive Twitter, you know, basketball fan, that's a lot of overlap there. Not everyone by any means, but that's, you know, where the conversation, you know, is for us and for a lot of people. So, you know, do you think, because there's this idea, there's value in these guys who stay with their teams and are the tentpoles of their franchises, you know, Dirk being with the Mavericks, that's incredibly valuable to Dirk, the Mavericks, and the NBA, you know, Kobe, Duncan, those guys, that creates, you know, kind of a stability that creates, like, you know, those teams and are going to get paid attention to because they have those stars and because they've been there forever. They've built this equity. They've built this interest through that. They've had these accomplishments through that. But there's also incredible value on having players switch teams and these new combinations. And that, you know, obviously free agency is driven, it drives an incredible amount of interest in the league and trades. And, you know, that's very exciting to imagine how these teams would take shape with new players, you know, how the chemistry will work, how it will work on and off the court, you know, all these things. These are all these stories are really interesting. I don't know if right now in the NBA, if there's, do you think there's the right balance between those two things? Like, to you as a fan, ignoring like whether it's good or bad for the players, we can get that can be a separate discussion. I think we both want what's best for the players, but just for you as a fan, do you feel like there's too much movement with stars, or do you feel like about the right amount, or you know, what's your feeling on that?
I would say maybe a little too much in terms of, I think especially with the way we look at like athletic peaks these days, and when guys sort of reach their athletic peaks in a lot of ways, you know, it's, to me, I would like it a little bit more if these guys stayed on a little bit. Like if Durant, you know, and again, I'm not saying that I want him, you know, like you said, I don't want him to not make, you know, the max amount of money until he's like 30 or whatever. But I like the idea of a guy getting to, you know, that age 30 or something like that. And that's not to say that, again, you know, I'd be fine if the teams gave them that money, but there was a benefit other than just the bird rights to let a team sort of keep the guys that they draft and go for it a little bit more. Cause I would like to see a Durant and Westbrook, you know, maybe a few more years, you know what I mean? Like maybe until they're 30, when you can really say, okay, they've reached their athletic peak, they haven't done it. Okay. We know now, but at the same time, I don't want them to be, you know, a guy like a DeMarcus Cousins, I look at and I go, oh man, he's like just stuck in Sacramento. And it's like, it'd be so cool to see him on a different team. And there's so many guys we see. So it to me, maybe it's a little too much, but at the same time, I don't, I don't want it to become very restrictive either, because there are plenty of guys that I look at and I go, oh man, I wish that guy could go somewhere, or I wish that guy could kind of move on and do that. So I'm very conflicted in that sense, where in a particular case like a Durant, I would like a few more years to kind of see, okay, now he's, because I really think that Durant's reached his peak the past, you know, few years, and really like to see him, okay, live out that peak with the team that drafted him, with Oklahoma City, and do that. Yeah. But at the same time, there are also tons of examples, like I mentioned, like a DeMarcus and a few other guys, where it's like, ah, oh, man, I really can't wait till I can kind of get away from their terrible franchise. But that's only because I value Oklahoma City as a franchise, and I don't value, you know, Sacramento as a franchise.
Sure.
Or a few other teams. So that's where I'm a little bit conflicted in that.
Yeah, sense. And it would be a neat story if Sacramento got its act together and was able to build a good team around Boogie, and then they were able to, you know, start making playoffs and making great runs, and you know, and you know, maybe a shocking deep run in the playoffs. I mean, that'd be a good story too. It seems like they're a long way from that, if ever, but you know, so there is that. I mean, you know, Jordan, as we talked about, you know, overcame, you know, they were not a good team for about 4 years or so before, you yeah. know, they kind of picked it up in like, you know, years 5, 6, and 7. But so it wasn't to the level of what Cousins has dealt with, and Cousins certainly contributes a lot of things to that situation too. But I think I'm okay with kind of how it is for the most part. Like I like that there are incentives for players to stay with one team, that the incumbent team does have some advantages. I think there is good, it is a good thing in stability for the league, and for, you know, me personally watching as a fan, you know, it would kind of suck to have guys just change teams all the time, and you know, no one to stay at their teams. So it's neat when guys do, but you know, like I said, obviously, if you add, you know, what I believe is right for the players, I think they should have that freedom, and they should have that, and you know, and I don't fault them, you know, for making that decision. I don't think it's bad morally. I see where, you know, there's some, you know, obviously there are costs and benefits to the league. So you know, there's sort of talk of doing certain things, like you know, maybe you increase the max salary, just get rid of max salary, although you run into issues like what Minnesota dealt with trying to rebuild around Kevin Garnett in the mid 2000s, when he took up so much of the salary, they had a tough time building around him, and there were other things they screwed up too that kept them from, you know, being able to do that, but that was a huge hindrance for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or something I don't like, and I doubt that you would like either, is like an NFL style franchise tax. I think that just puts too much power with the team. I do think that,
yeah, right,
I
yeah.
do think increasing the max salary, that there's a benefit to the players there, although I worry about getting rid of the max salary, just because I think concentrating the wealth on so few elite players has sort of a problem on its own. Mm-hmm. Even though I see the argument that those are really the players who are driving the league, so they should make, you know, a whole lot of money. But I think I like the idea of sharing the wealth better for, like, you know, I think that's better overall for the players in the league. But, you know, that's something where I can kind of see both sides. But I don't know. Is there any of those ideas, or any that I haven't mentioned, that you really think would be like a strong, like, okay, we can change the league to kind of keep this from happening again? Or is it, you know, this, again, this is sort of a one-time confluence of a bunch of circumstances that we talked about, the huge cap jump, Steph's low salary, et cetera, it's, you know, nothing quite like this has ever happened before. It's kind of unlikely to ever happen again.
Yeah, I think one thing that I don't believe you mentioned, and one thing that I've sort of thought in my mind that would be decent, but it kind of it's got some little caveats to it, is that, you know, you can sign your incumbents, you know, with the bird rights, and you can go over the luxury tax, and you have to pay that penalty, and then you pay the repeater penalty, and you do all that sort of stuff. Maybe lessening those penalties, so it's like, okay, I can, you know, in the case of Oklahoma City, the reason they didn't re-sign James Harden is because they didn't want to get into the penalty. They didn't want to get into the tax penalty, pay repeater taxes as a small market. They, in their mind, thought that they couldn't afford that. And we sort of were talking to people on Twitter a little bit earlier, and you were mentioning, well, hey, I don't know if they couldn't afford that. You know, they said that, but we don't know that. Like, we don't know. These teams make a lot of money. Like, maybe they could do that. So, but at the same time, that's what they sell. That's what they say. These franchises go, hey, look, we can't get into this. We can't do that. So we're going to have to trade a guy like a James Harden in his prime, or a guy that was just about to, you know, ascend to another level and was just about getting there, that Oklahoma City, unfortunately, with the confluence of different things that happened, were looking at it going, hey, look, we have to pay Durant because of the Derrick Rose rule. We have to give him more money We just re-signed Serge Ibaka. We just re-signed, you know, Russell. There's nothing else we can do. You know, the only way we can keep James Harden is if we just guarantee that we're going to pay this luxury tax. We're going to pay this repeater tax, which is it's a big penalty. And for some teams, you know, the Thunder sold it as, we can't do that. Sorry, we have to trade James Harden. That's something where maybe you look at and you go, okay, maybe if there wasn't so much of a penalty for that, maybe if there was a way that you can sort of get away from that. But at the same time, that would be a problem because there would be, you get situations again where the rich teams again could just kind of re-sign their guys forever and then those guys never move or leave. Whereas one of the benefits of the max deal and one of the benefits of these things is that lesser teams can get in the room with these free agents. You know, we sort of always think that every big star goes to just the biggest market and that's it. But it doesn't happen that way. A lot of times, you know, right now we're dealing with a situation where the Denver Nuggets of all people are talking to Dwayne Wade and actually in the room with Dwayne Wade because they have the most money. And Dwayne Wade might be saying, hey, look, I built this legacy in Miami. You know, Cleveland wants me, but these Nuggets guys are going to give me a lot of money. It's like, well, you know what? Hey, like I'm, you know, 32 years old, 33. That's not a bad idea if I do that. Like, I don't know that they're going to sign him and I doubt they will, but it keeps those smaller market teams in the conversation if they're able to give that money. Whereas if you basically said, hey, these penalties are less or whatever, the big market teams are still going to kind of dominate in that way. And I don't know if there's any way to ever solve that kind of conundrum, but that might be one tool, is to maybe make the repeater tax not as big of a penalty, or maybe the luxury tax. Maybe when you use those bird rights and go over your salary cap, that maybe you don't get penalized all that much. But again, we're talking about a very specific situation like Oklahoma City, where just a ton of stuff went wrong at the exact right time for them that it just kind of didn't work.
Yeah, and a bunch of stuff went right for Golden State at the exact time.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it's obviously a big confluence of things. So there was a really great article by Roger Sherman of SB Nation, kind of looking at the closest parallels to Durant joining a power team. We thought of some of these independently as well, but so you know, the two that I think are kind of the strongest, maybe three. One is Wilt Chamberlain joining the 1969 Lakers to team up with Jerry West and Baylor. Wilt was the 1968 MVP with Philadelphia. They had won the title in 67. The, you know, West and Baylor had had made the finals 5 times in 7 years, and losing each time, of course. So Wilt was kind of there to get them over the hump. We've talked about this a lot during our WrestleMania podcast, so there's no need to get into the details again. They did end up winning a championship in 72, but it was kind of a disappointment overall. Part of the issue was that they kind of had to gut their roster to get Wilt going there. And also Wilt was 32, Baylor, I think was 34, and West was, I believe, 32 as well. So these guys were definitely in an advanced stage of their career, although they were still, particularly West and Chamberlain, were still incredibly effective players. The one that I think is the closest to the situation is Moses Malone in 1983. He had won the MVP with the Rockets in 82. Then he ended up signing an offer sheet to the 76ers. It was basically a restricted free agency type situation. Instead of matching the Rockets, it worked out sort of a sign and trade with the Sixers. And the Sixers had been to the finals in 82. They were not quite as elite of a team, and really their only star was Irving, although they had some other, you know, very good players, Bobby Jones, Maurice Cheeks, that sort of thing. And then they would really be a dominant team in 83 and would sweep their way to the championship versus the Lakers. So you know, Moses was he was around 28, 29 at this point. So he was, you know, still in his 20s. He would kind of start to fade a little bit starting in 84, although he was still, you know, a very good player for a number of years. So, you know, this is the one, you know, Moses was not leaving quite the powerhouse the Thunder were, although the Rockets had, you know, they made the finals in 81. So they were not, you know, they were a pretty good team, but this is, I definitely think, the one where a prime star who was the MVP joining a powerhouse, the closest one to me that I could think of, you know, kind of fitting with the age timeline and fitting with a, you know, a team that lost in the finals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so as well. Of course there's, you know, Shaq joining the 97 Lakers, but that wasn't a team that was, yeah. He was obviously, super dominant at that point, just, right. In the peak of his career. But that was a team that, Nick Van Exel and, Eddie Jones. And it's like, yeah, they won, 43 games. Yeah. Adele Harris was their coach. And, fun. But it wasn't this powerhouse just got even better. Whereas, that Sixers and Moses is probably the closest comp that you can come up with, even though that Rockets team isn't as good as the Thunder. I agree. That's probably the closest comp we do have.
Yeah, the Shaq. Now that Lakers team won some of the 56 games the year before, but they did have to. They got rid of a lot of Divots, and they had to cut a little bit to get Shaq in there. So it wasn't like it was quite replaced. It wasn't quite joining this powerhouse. And obviously, the Lakers had playoff struggles until Phil got there in 2000. So, it wasn't there. The other ones that were mentioned I think are interesting is Earl Monroe joining the Knicks, 2 years after they'd won the championship, and had demanded a trade from Baltimore after they couldn't come to a salary agreement, and then teamed up with Clyde Frazier and Willis Reed, and then won a title in 73. And interesting because Monroe had actually struggled to fit in for a while. His playing time went down. He almost became a bench player for a while before he kind of, started to, go back a little bit to his old self, even if he had to kind of change his playing style. But I don't predict that's going to quite happen to Durant. But that one's sort of interesting in where, it was kind of a, he really had to take a backseat role for that team. And we're going to have more on that coming up soon when we talk about the Knicks and on our Mysteries of the 70s project. So, a couple other big ones. I think, obviously you had fun with this one on Twitter, Charles Barkley, couple of instances.
Yes, because of course Charles Barkley today, as he's wont to do, and I think PSA, maybe we should just all stop listening to anything Charles Barkley ever says, but people still like to listen to it and react to it, and there we go. Anyway, he was, I forgot the exact phrasing, but I think something of, a coward, or I don't know what the hell word he used exactly to describe, Kevin Durant going to the Warriors, but it was kind of funny because I dug up a New York Times article from 1996 when Barkley, of course, was traded to the Rockets, and the New York Times little tidbit from here says, Barkley, intent on winning an NBA title before he retires, said, in this quote, I'm very excited. Obviously, it's something I wanted to do. Houston was my first priority, and Houston, of course, had, won back-to-back titles, very close before this, 1996. And people sort of look at, oh, well, Barkley, when he got, he was winding down, but he was pretty damn good in Phoenix, even that last year. It was really when he went to Houston that it all kind of started to fall apart, and his body, was sort of starting to, play tricks on him, and he was just ended up kind of breaking down very quickly after that. But he was still a very productive, very good player. I think he was 31 at this point. But yeah, here's an example of a guy that, not so much his choice to join that team, but mentions in a quote, Houston was my first priority, which I'm sure he said, hey, here's a few teams I wouldn't mind going to. And oh, by the way, there's that team that has, Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler and all, has these decent players on it. Hey, I wouldn't mind going to that team. So you look at that and that's another situation again that he can, say, oh, Durant's this and Durant's that. But, you kind of did the same thing, Charles.
Sure. Yeah. By the way, he said that Durant tried to cheat his way to a championship.
Cheats. A coward. I forgot who said that. Somebody else said that, but I forgot who. Oh, that was Screamin' A. Smith. Yet another guy we should probably stop listening to and reacting to, but that we still do.
That's probably a good point. Yeah, and then also, similar thing with the 93 Suns, where he forced his way out of Philly. Now, granted, Philly got Jeff Hornacek back, who was a very good player. So although they were, the Suns had been to the conference finals a couple of times, were a mid-50s win team. So they were set up as well. Again, none of these teams are quite as stacked as last year's Warriors were, but, as we said, they're a very small number of teams that could say that. And the other one is, of course, LeBron and in 2011 with the Heat. And, like people say, well, the Heat weren't a good team before it came in. Well, yeah, but they got a chance to form, a incredible big three, one of the biggest accumulations of talent of all time on that team. So the fact that it makes it a little bit different that, of course, the Warriors are able to have more depth and have more established, but I don't think it's that different. Like, it's not like some people were making that comparison and are like, you can't make that comparison. But I think it's pretty similar. Like it's definitely, you know, at a similar level of how you're, you know, a superstar, you know, choosing this power team. And you know, people definitely were obviously aghast at it at the time. And obviously the reaction was somewhat similar to what Durant is dealing with, but probably not quite as fierce as what Durant was dealing with, but it was still or opposite. James dealt with much more criticism than Durant is dealing with, but
yeah. And the Heat always felt like kind of a sleeping giant at that point. So, I mean, you knew that they were kind of bad, and like, but you knew that at some point, especially with Pat Riley at the helm and Dwayne Wade still in his prime, and you know, having won a title a few years ago, that was a team that wasn't just going to go, all right, well, for the rest of Wade's career, we're just going to be bad. Like, you know, we're just going to have Jermaine O'Neal, and we're just going to be terrible for like the next like 10 years. Like, you knew that there was something. Like, if Pat Riley wasn't just going to sit back and let that happen, and Dwayne Wade wasn't just going to sit and let that. So you always kind of had this feeling that, yeah, while the Heat in that year weren't good, or maybe the years prior, you kind of always had a feeling that that was a sleeping giant team. I always at least had that feeling.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they specifically, you know, were taking a step back in the year before they got LeBron to, you know, to have a chance with him, to not put money on their books and so forth. It was obviously very smart, and it worked out very well for them. So, you know, as far as the Thunder go, Ian Levy wrote a great piece on how they kind of fit among the best dynasties to never win a title. So I think we should talk about that, because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, it was on fansided.com, and you can look it up, of course. It's, greatest NBA dynasties without a title is I believe, the title of it. But, it's kind of interesting. So they I'm not going to get into the kind of the gory math of what he uses to produce this dynasty score, but basically it's a little bit of SRS and point differentials and adjusted point differentials and that sort of stuff. And you don't have to know that to necessarily know the rankings of the guys, but definitely check out the article if you're curious on how we got to this point and kind of the math details of it. But when you look at the Thunder and you know, sort of dynasties without a championship, they're right up there. I mean, they're very, very close. Ian does mention that, you know, he did not include the 2015-2016 season because I guess their SRS wasn't at this level of 2.5 or whatever. Yeah. But
year that Durant was hurt. So
right, exactly. So that sort of stopped their, you know, dynasty in that sense. But in a way, if you really add that and you get the 7 full seasons of that team, they take a huge leap up to like this top tier group, and this group, just to kind of give you an idea of these teams, these dynasties without championships, the number one is the Utah Jazz, of course, the Stockton Malone, you know, 93-2001. They have 48 dynasty points, 8 seasons without a title. After them is the Dallas Mavericks of the early 2000s, the Milwaukee Bucks of the early 80s and throughout the 80s, the Seattle Supersonics of the early 90s, Phoenix Suns of the late 80s, you know, mid 90s, Sacramento Kings, of course, the Chris Webber, Jason Williams / Mike Bibby, you know, Vlad Peja teams, the Portland Trailblazers of the early 90s and basically late 80s. Then you have the Thunders right there, and that's without that, you know, 2015-2016 season. Then a few others kind of want to know the Clippers, this current Clippers incarnation, the Denver Nuggets of the late Melo to, what you know, post-Melo time, and then the Phoenix Suns as well. The 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns are right up there as well. But yeah, while they're not like the level of the Utah Jazz or even the Dallas Mavericks of the early 2000s, Oklahoma City is right up there as like a dynasty that just couldn't get it done, but we're very, very good.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, the teams, this is in 79, so the 3-point era or 80s, so the 3-point era of teams. So this isn't including right. Some of the early teams. I mean, obviously the, you know, the Baylor West Lakers would, you know, definitely be a candidate as well. And you know, there are some teams that who only won one championship who I would kind of consider would be dynasties. Obviously the Milwaukee Bucks of the early 70s, Philadelphia 76ers of the late 60s before, you know, Wilt demanded a trade. They weren't quite as long here. They didn't win a championship, but the Magic of the mid 90s, that's obviously a, you know, huge comparison with Shaq and Penny for those 4 seasons, were a tremendous young team. A lot of parallels between those teams as well. So yeah, I think they definitely are among that conversation of what if. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's a huge bummer if you're a Thunder fan, and it's sad to lose a favorite player. so those feelings are completely understandable. Not less understandable, and I understand this only reflects a very, very small percentage of the fan base is, you know, making videos of, like, a bunch of people shooting guns at Durant's jersey and putting it on fire and stuff like that. That's obviously, like, that's a weird thing, and of course reminiscent upon some of the reactions that some Cavs fans had upon LeBron leaving.
Yeah, it's always fun. But of course, as people always have to mention, there's probably, millions of people or at least thousands that did not react that way. But of course, they don't put vines or people don't share vines of a guy like carefully like being like, oh, OK, well, that's all right. Yeah. Like, there, no vines of that gets retweeted.
Yeah, you don't share vines of your kid not crying at.
Right. Of your kid being like, oh, all right, well, whatever. We still have Russell.
Right,
like,
we'll be OK.
That's fine.
Yeah. So, so to you, the one thing that we kind of got into this a little bit, but we should get into a little bit more. Does this make the NBA seem more boring or more inevitable to you?
In a way, yes. I'm kind of conflicted in this because, yes, it sort of does, because I said it. Like, I really loved that Thunder Warriors, that budding rivalry. I really thought that was going to be really cool to see that sort of mature and get older. And then these guys kind of finally maybe get over the hump and they beat the Warriors and whatever. But that's kind of, to me, that's boring that now we lose that. And it seems kind of boring that the Warriors are like, oh, my God, they're just so easily the favorites. Of course, in the West, maybe they still have some trouble with Cleveland or whoever in the NBA Finals or whatever. But it almost seems like an inevitability that the Warriors are going to make it to the NBA Finals, because they made it to the NBA Finals without Kevin Durant. Now they have, the top five player in the league added to their team. So that's kind of boring in that sense. But the not boring part is, like I said, with the Heat pick three, is that every game the Warriors are in now is much watched TV, regardless of who they're against, because you know that fan base, whether they're on the road or whatever, that fan base is just going to want to beat them. They're, no matter who it is, no matter if it's your Orlando Magic, if it's whoever, all that team wants to do, and all that, especially you even get that with teams that aren't very good or teams that have, 10 wins or whatever. That's a big deal the Warriors are coming. Let's try to beat them. Like, teams get up for that. Crowds get up for that. It's going to be sold out wherever they go. If I have a chance to go to a game in Chicago, that's going to be come unglued. The crowd's going to go nuts for every single thing, because it's, we toppled the Warriors. And anytime they win, it's going to be this giant thing and everyone's going to make a big deal about it. And everyone's going to be watching about it, the highlights. So that part of it is kind of fun, that you have this sort of big heel team that now everybody wants to beat and everybody cannot wait to sort of topple, and everyone's going to bring their best. But it seems like at the end of the day, they're still just going to kind of make the NBA Finals, and then the fun's going to start. So the Western Conference playoffs rather become a little less fun in that sense. But we don't know. We have no idea what's going to happen. They might have some trouble gelling. There might be a team that emerges out of nowhere, this phoenix that rises. All of a sudden Utah becomes awesome. Like, that's the fun part that you still get. So in a way, it is boring, because I feel like the Western Conference is kind of settled. But it's cool to have a super team, and it's cool to have these teams sort of vie to beat that super team as well.
Yeah, right. I mean, it like, obviously in the past, dynasties have been good for the NBA's business. Is there a point in which the Warriors could get so dominant that it drives people away? I don't know. I guess it's possible, but it's hard. As personally as a fan, I mean, I'm going to have a lot of interest in what the Warriors do, how they play, how they look. I think they're going to be appealing to watch aesthetically, just, all the passing and all the ball movement and great shot making and being a terror in transition. I think they're going to be really good defensively too. Durant really showed a lot during the playoffs on that end. And, with probably less pressure to deliver offensively, he can focus on that more. Whether they're going to be going full board during the regular season is a question. I mean, I don't think they're going to be gunning for it to the point in which they win 73 games or try to break that record. But I do think that it's hard to imagine them winning like fewer than like 67 or 68 games just because of the talent that they have. I mean, anything can happen, obviously. And they are somewhat vulnerable to injuries. They had to gut their team a little bit. They lost some of their depth with, Barnes and Bogut and those guys. They've added some veteran guys, but, older guys are more susceptible to injury. Things can happen. So, yeah, I mean, how much of a chance did you give the Cavs beating the Warriors going into the finals?
Very little. I gave them, like, I think, you and I independently talked, and then when it was down 3-1, I was like, all right, well, the Cavs are done.
Right.
Like, they have no way of winning this game. Like, there's zero way. Like, the team looked terrible. Kyrie was bad. Love was bad. LeBron was kind of, it was just like, oh, okay, this series is over. It's boring. I don't even care about the series at all. And then it became the greatest, NBA finals of all time. And we had to record a podcast about how great it was and how great that game 7 was. So,
I mean, they looked overwhelmed. you know, they had some, they competed in some level, but yeah, it, so yeah, stuff can happen. And you know, watching the NBA is more about like watching, you know, worrying about who wins and who loses. I mean, there's the aesthetic beauty of the game. There's just the, you know, just fun and exciting of just watching basketball and watching the, you know, incredible athleticism and the great plays and seeing things that you expect and seeing things that you don't expect. I mean, you know, most of us who are fans of the league and who have a team that we root for, we know that there are very, very few chances. There are very, very few teams that have a chance at winning a championship. And this is probably a going to be a season in which that is that group is even lesser than usual. But, you know, most of us live through life, you know, with either our team never being a contender or, you know, rarely being a contender unless we're, you know, a fan of a few lucky franchises. So, yeah, this is just kind of life. You know, this is life as an NBA fan. You know, you hope for the best and you're probably more optimistic about your team's chances than you should be. But, you know, they obviously look like an incredible powerhouse and they're, you know, they're worth it. You know, it's worth considering whether at some point they make the NBA, you know, too boring, but you know, we're a long way from that, you know, with a lot of things have to happen for that to happen. So, so to finish up, you did some looking into where Durant and Westbrook kind of rank among the all-time duos as far as, you know, kind of the numbers go.
Yeah, so just kind of a quick little snapshot. Durant and Westbrook, they have 1,148 games together. In that time, they accumulated an average of 86.3 win shares and a 0.198 win shares per 48. Also, 24.9 points per game, 6.5 rebounds per game, and 5.75 assists per game. So very good when you look at it. But as far as other, you know, big duos, they're a good duo, but there are a lot that are just a lot better. You know, Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, of course, you know, almost 1,500 games total, or a little over 1,500 games total, 115.8 win shares average between the two, and a 0.178 win shares per 48. So they accumulated more, obviously, with more games, a little bit less on the win shares per 48. Stockton and Malone is probably your duo, and that kind of makes sense in a lot of ways. Nearly 3,000 games total, 217.45 win shares average, and then a 0.209 win shares per 48. So that's one that just kind of stands out as far and away probably the best of all time. Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, of course, a little over 1,500 games total, 135.75 win shares, 0.222 win shares per 48. So they're probably one of the better duos in terms of win shares per 48 and efficiency in that standpoint. But, you know, you look at others and you look at the games total and the overall win shares, of course, Stockton Malone above them. Bob Cousy and Bill Russell, only less than 1,000 games together, 76.5 win shares, 0.175 win shares per 48. So a little bit less. Shaq and Kobe, a little over 1,000 games total, 85.3 win shares average between the two, and 0.212 win shares per 48. So they're very close. Win shares per 48, Shaq and Kobe are a little bit above Durant and Westbrook, but in terms of like overall win shares or average win shares, rather, they're right there. And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson, one that we kind of forget a lot of times, 1,500 games total between those two, 108.85 win shares average, and then a 0.200 win shares per 48. So you look at Durant and Westbrook, I'd say the closest comp is probably Shaq and Kobe, though Shaq and Kobe a little bit more. And if you're into the rings argument, Shaq and Kobe has, you know, a few more rings to talk about,
which is, you know, there, it's not, but it's not nothing. I mean, you know,
no, it's still significant.
And obviously, you know, Stockton Malone have that longevity and played so long together and had that excellence in the regular season, but obviously Pippen and Jordan stand out when it comes to the titles as well, even though they they didn't play as long together. So I mean, it's funny that other than you know, of these seven, you know, two of them, Durant, Westbrook, and Stockton Malone, didn't win a championship, and then the rest of them basically, you know, fueled. Well, I guess Baylor and West didn't win a title together because West did won his at the end without Baylor. But, you know, four of these seven, you know, fueled basically the greatest dynasties that, you know, the league has ever had, and then and then you know, the other half didn't. So it didn't have any, or you know, didn't have any together at least. So that's interesting. They got them in between the two.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I will miss the Durant Westbrook Thunder. Those two playing together, there was a fun kinship between the two. The Thunder weren't always the most interesting team to watch. It did sometimes devolve into a lot of isolations and so forth. But obviously, they grew together. Westbrook has this incredible manic energy. It's going to be interesting to kind of see how it goes with him being the star there, assuming he stays there. He and Durant they had a certain amount of yin and yang, and to see kind of their relationship evolve and the kind of the ups and downs with the sort of them whether that chemistry worked. I think their chemistry was for the most part really good on the court. So I will miss that, but I do think that I am excited to see what the future brings us with our.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see Westbrook on his own too. I was talking to friends during the Western Conference Finals and stuff, and saying hey, it would suck to have that team break up, and oh man, it'd be bad. But I really kind of like the idea of Russell Westbrook being like his own guy and able to just kind of do whatever, because like he's such just a man. It was just fun to see him just sort of unleashed, and we saw that the one year when Durant got hurt, and of course that team was not great around him, but it'll be interesting to see, because I think he's a better player now than he was even then. I just want to see that guy on his own. Like I just now, like, you look at that team without Durant, they've probably got a chance to win 45 games. I don't think that's unrealistic that they can maybe do that, with Oladipo and Westbrook and a few other guys, Adams who emerged, and Cantor who's kind of fun as well. So that'll be fun just to see kind of Westbrook on his own and really just unchained for the first time since that Durant injury, and that'll be fun to see. And this Golden State team is going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch as well.
Yeah, they'll be a story if nothing else. So we'll see if we have to embrace our overlords, the Warriors, or whether someone else will be able to match up with them. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the league adjusts to them. Obviously that first season is going to rival that first season for the Heat, where everyone just kind of got geared up against them, and that first Warriors Thunder matchup is going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot of stuff coming up that I'm looking forward to. So we'll see how it works out. But
it'll always make the Christmas Day games always fun, because the NBA always gives you a good matchup. So you'll probably get Thunder.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. So, all right, Rich. Well, everyone can check us out. They could find us on. They can find us at harborproxies.com. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Search Over and Back there. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. So drop us a line. Let us know how we're doing. Leave a review on Stitcher and iTunes if you listen to us on one of those platforms. We would greatly appreciate it. And we'll be back soon. We've got our Mysteries of the 1970s project coming up that hopefully everyone will get into. So until next time, thanks for listening.